This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
The title is really Yellow End, but I'm not there yet. This is a long epigraph. Fat chance, which I think is just an interesting saying, refers to a response for an invitation to be involved in an exhibition. Some time ago, Anthony Dauphé was going to do a show of John Cage's scores, which are often very beautiful. He also wanted to show work by artists who were interested in or influenced by Cage. So he asked if I would send him something that related. Cage was an important influence for me, especially his writings. So I sent Dauphé a fax that said, "Fat chance, John Cage." Dauphé thought it was a refusal to participate. I thought it was the work. That's Bruce Nauman. And it's from a recent issue of Art Form, I believe, where he's talking about mapping the studio. And it came to mind because when I was going to talk, and I thought I would call my talk, which I didn't know the form of yet, Yellow End, I think that Aaron thought that was a provisional title, and he was waiting for me to say more about it. And eventually I said a response to the poetry of Marjorie Welsh, because I knew I would talk about your poetry. But the response has been ongoing. We've been having a conversation. And one of the focal points has been this category of language, yellow, and making distinctions within the category and then naming. The naming of the category and the naming of the distinctions. And Marjorie's written in the name of studio, which is part of her response to our conversation. And I've been working in this notebook, little modest notebook, pencil, carried around. Starts with a triptych. Marjorie hasn't seen it yet. She's seen Xeroxes of it, and part of it has been published in a journal called Bombay Gin, which was published at Naropa, and the reproductions were very poor. I sent them the scans and told them to arrange them however they wanted. The intention is that there will be 52 of them. There aren't now. There are, I think, about 40. It's 52 pickup. And so they arranged them in a grid, 3x3. And they were reproduced so badly you can hardly see them. I don't know why, because technology is so improved that every reproduction has to be so poor now. But this began with a question about yellow. Cadmium yellow light and cadmium yellow lemon. What does it mean that they are both called yellow? In her artist statement, undated, Welsh speaks about her use of diptych, quote, "to announce that this physical difference will be realized also as formal difference." She writes, "Current projects also include paintings whose structure of difference presents two competing yellows, two competing reds, and two competing blues, to ask the question, which is the true one? The relative rather than the absolute condition of norms is thereby revealed." About yellow, Goethe wrote in his Theory of Colors, "This is the color nearest the light. And in its highest purity, it always carries with it the nature of brightness, and it has a serene, gay, softly exciting character. Hence, in painting, it belongs to the illumined and emphatic side." Color is a pan-species perception. Color discrimination is an activity in the brain. That is, in humans, it is dependent upon an underlying neural structure, a neural basis of sensation. It is not a cultural construction and does not depend on language. It is not solely a function of the wavelengths of light. It is not just a function of the atomic structure of the object. It is not simply generated by light upon the object of perception. We humans have color constancy, which is to say we recognize a color as the same, regardless of whether its wavelength is entirely changed by being seen in red sunlight or blue fluorescent light. Our experience of color is physical, cognitive, not a function of consciousness or of naming. Prior to the work of neuroscientists such as Maturana and Varela, or Varela, Thompson, and Roche, the color theorist and psychologist Faber-Baron might have found this kin to or a form of eidetic imagery, somewhere between sensation and imagination. In the beginning, I wanted to talk about the painting. However, without having seen, actually physically having seen the paintings, I could not speak right about them. And are you going to ask me why later on? I had to see them. I've seen them online and I've seen them on paper. One way to address both the painting impulse and the poetry impulse was to consider how Welisch has written about painting and use that writing collected in Signifying Art as the journal work, the commonplace book, as her other for poetry. This would be an accommodation to both, as well as a speculation about sets of relationships or possible relationships. In the beginning, I thought I could talk about the painting and the poetry together, how they both find their origins in, quote, these quotes are from Signifying Art, a smudge, a dot, a line, the not very noble, unpromising, initial and initiating expressions, physically slight though they may be. All of this under the rubric of yellow and, our investigation of its absolute relational, formal, compositional, eidetic, and physical neural qualities, oral values, rhythmic values, translations. The focus on competition in the repeated phrase, two competing yellows and so on, began to attract attention to itself. After all, Welisch could have expressed these relationships in more general terms of comparison, acts of bringing together, com. Comparison is from compare, to speak of or represent as similar, to liken, making parallelisms that don't quite match up. And Welisch was interested in difference. Competition is from competera, to fall together, coincide, come together. Petera itself is to fall upon, assail, aim at, make for, try to reach, strive after, sue for, solicit, ask or seek. In its post-classical sense, it is to enter into or be put into rivalry with, to vie with another in any respect. Can't have difference without the other thing. The repetition, rhythm of repetition, redundancy even, difference in repetition. It becomes interesting to frame or undermine these considerations of competitive relationality with a reading of the use of simile in Welisch's poetry. Think of it, diptych and simile. There is something of the deep structure of comparison to be addressed here, and by deep structure, I refer to work currently being done by linguists who are tracking simile, not as the trivial poetic figure Williams scorned, a rhetorical gesture, a figure of speech, but as a fundamental neural cognitive epistemological tool, a structure of finding out. We'll leave the metaphorical possibilities of finding out to George Lakoff and move on. And I mentioned George because I just ran into him. We were at a social event a few days ago, and you know, he works strictly on metaphor. It's very strict, and he'll analyze anything you say in terms of metaphor. So he was pretty nonplussed when I said I was working on simile. He didn't want to talk about it. So we have the structure of comparison active as a questioning as well as compositional idea of form in the paintings. And we have the structure of comparison using the parallelism of simile as a means of composition in the poetry through comparison, through composed. Simile, in the most open sense, explicit or implicit parallel structure of like or as, often extended, unpleating image in rhythmizing measure, for instance, from Casting Sequences, the title poem, of actuality, of actual number, pale and spelled in cold, a contiguity defying visual markers of line, period, space, reiteration with difference, accumulating force in surprising acts of accretion and elimination. Do the terms compete? From Casting Sequences. The theory of tragedy in this view does not separate actor and spectator, but extends indefinitely to the farmer walking behind his plow. And from The Logics, Else in Substance. Logic through lyric is arguably intriguing. Yellow and, yellow pigments, ochre, transparent gold ochre, raw sienna, Mars yellow, the cadmiums, from pale primrose to deep orange, a wide assortment of shades permanent for all techniques but fresco, identical to cadmium reds insofar as pigment properties and permanence are concerned, Naples yellow, strontium yellow, cobalt yellow, Hansa yellow, nickel azo yellow, inferior and obsolete yellow pigments, chrome yellows and oranges, Indian yellow, yellow lakes, Dutch pinks, steel de grand, not permanent, yellows changing, music changes. But we are not looking at the yellows just now, but at the syntax, the inner structure of comparison as a means of making order, changing order, ideas of order. The syntax of diptych, like or as, simile. And this is where, if we'd had the funding, the orchestra would play a little, a few choruses of Begin the Begin. Initial point of order, repetition. Repetition as enchantment, incantation, extension, elaboration, registration. The beguiling text that lives within the title, Begetting Textile. The Begin's practice accords the viewer, reader, listener, farmer, dance partner, a greater role in the completion or lack of completion of, the accomplishment of, the work. Perhaps completion bears no mention here. The Begin, however, was a member of a lay sisterhood in the Netherlands in the 13th century before she became the name of a ballroom dance based on a Roomba-like dance from Martinique, named after the Begin. The hood worn in the sisterhood, Begetting Begin, text of flirtation. And in 1935, Cole Porter's Begin the Begin from the musical Jubilee, Moments Divine, Rapture Serene, Begin the Begin. From the windows flew open. As a tourist aches, as a tourist experiences the entailment of Europe without words and only a wallet to express, feeling adult but stored within the body of an infant. Infans. And from Leonardo da Vinci, O mathematicians, shed light on error such as this. The spirit has no voice, because where there is voice, there is body. Although where there is body, there is not always yet voice. Repetition, its pre-echo, in the beginning is rhythm. This is the point of departure, as well as the point de repère, point of reference, guide. This is repetition and difference, the diptych. Quote, recurrent architectural strategies, one sees irony and enchantment, an evocative rather than archaeological use of antiquity, a bricolage of references, the use of off-balance and ingenuous perspective, a predilection for secluded spaces that seem suspended from gravity. That's Fulvio Irace from an essay, Precursors of Modernism, Milan, 1920-1930. Seemed to apply. From Casting Sequences, in this going abroad, the solid observer antecedes the rebirth of space, yet another voice breaks, then successively new excrescences of the invisible oral spectacle move a process well in advance of seeing. Singing, perhaps, in polyrhythmic color, in cubist progressions, even achromatic, rhythms visible as wave patterns used in Polynesian navigation, where there are long distances to travel over open seas with no fixed locating points. When is a metaphysical plaster like a matrix? How does paralysis suddenly function like a prompt? By wishing, as in, from Casting Sequences, wishing to make a metaphysical plaster, wishing to be a matrix, both capitalized W's at the beginning of lines where they're not always or not usually. Paralysis prompts our plan of non-identical yet necessarily correlated colonnades. Multiple pulse. Repetition in DNA leads to new organs with new functions. Repetition, the simplest form of redundancy, a term having suddenly acquired renewed currency through its use value for information theory, leads in time to chance mutations, the redundant genes ceasing to be copies and becoming unique sequences. the timing of expression of a gene that was part of a regulatory system would alter altering function, contributing entirely new meaning. At first it looked like repetition, but later it became apparent that the rhythm involved beginning and beginning again, a recuperation through the implied or implicate series of beginning, again. Differing from Freudian interpretation, speculation by Walter Benjamin and others has it that repetition is a means of dealing with trauma. And I think at this point, I'm going to take an extra second or two to read a couple of excerpts from Benjamin's Toys and Play, just to remind ourselves why that, or what that's about, that distinction. He writes, in 1928, in all probability, the situation is this. Before we transcend ourselves in love and enter into the life and the often alien rhythm of another human being, we experiment early on with basic rhythms that proclaim themselves in their simplest forms in these sorts of games with inanimate objects. Or rather, these are the rhythms in which we first gain possession of ourselves. So he's talking about the kind of repetitive play. Last, such a study would have to explore the great law that presides over the rules and rhythms of the entire world of play, the law of repetition. We know that for a child, repetition is the soul of play, that nothing gives him greater pleasure than to do it again. The obscure urge to repeat things is scarcely less powerful in play, scarcely less cunning in its workings than the sexual impulse in love. It is no accident that Freud has imagined he could detect an impulse, quote, beyond the pleasure principle in it. This is not only the way to master frightening fundamental experiences, it also means enjoying one's victories and triumphs over and over again with total intensity. An adult relieves his heart from its terrors and doubles happiness by turning it into a story. A child creates the entire event anew and starts again right from the beginning. At first it looked like a repetition, etc. Differing from Freudian interpretation, speculation by Benjamin, and this is from Jeffrey Melman's Benjamin's Radio for Children and others, has it that repetition is a means of dealing with trauma. Perhaps you recall a passage from Deleuze and Guattari's A Thousand Plateaus in the chapter 1837 of The Refrain, which begins, a child in the dark, gripped with fear, comforts himself by singing under his breath. And the paragraph finishes, but the song itself is already a skip. It jumps from chaos to the beginning of order in chaos and is in danger of breaking apart at any moment. There is always sonority in Ariadne's Thread or the Song of Orpheus. The thread and the song. Quote, marching orders, it's murdering my sense of rhythm and making me crazy. That's Klebnikov from The King of Time. One's own rhythmizing impulse makes song. Repetition expresses new function, whereas imposed metrics are crazy-making and life-threatening. There is an unforeseeable homeostatic relationship between rhythm and expectation. Quote, a constantly renewable expectation in movement, never a sense of satiety, writes Kolakowski in The Myth of Love, the chapter in The Presence of Myth, and from Logics in Else as Substance. Again, logic through lyric is arguably intriguing, an allure for more of it. The logic of love is fascination. Expectations need repetition with disturbance. Like genetic forms, art forms change, as Shklovsky wrote, quote, in order to preserve the perceptibility of life. The ideas of order change in the progressions. As ideas of order shift, new logics are revealed in the event. This logic is rhythmic event. After all, if the mind, as Spinoza would have it, is just an idea of the body, then thought, why not, is rhythm's accomplishment. Proceeding in cascades on the order of parallel distribution or simultaneity, ideas of order are physical, and this is where the painting and the poem are not separate. Poem as symposium, art as forum. A constantly renewable expectation in movement, never a sense of satiety. A wholeness without completion. A potential wholeness, a phantom limb energy's charge accretes in the gaps. As if. From Begetting Textile. Quote, but our minds at some point begin to consider the way they themselves work. That's from Naomi Goldberg, The Brain-Shaped Mind. It's her new book on connectionism. The poem is a mind reader beginning at some point to consider how it works. Implicate type without token. Token is the individual reading. Your firing neurons, cascading neurotransmitter. Your receptors, cascades of activation. Thus yellow and parallel distribution, interleaving disturbances of a certain order, in a certain order of form. The poem is a mind reader, quote, mapping neuronal configurations onto thoughts, ... to read other people's minds as well. Goldblum is not exactly what she says, but by simply eliminating a few words, some code, I make her say this, map a different thought. I'm reading, her neuronal and semantic mapping of a thought and its rhythm, and its thoughts begin to move. This is from Begetting Textile. As if answerable to anthem in antis, even as, insofar as illustrated milk spilt on printer's ink throughout the protest movement, sparkling rhetoric. A kind of sonic orchestration takes place out of the waves, making durable form in the registration itself. The registration is in terms of conventions, agreeing and or breaking with conventions. Like innovation and improvisation in jazz, the degree of distance from conventions, from use, plays upon the expectations, nerves, of the reader, listener. This is where the issue of perceptibility comes in. The metaphor of the horizon proves useful here, horizon of perceptibility, threshold of registration. As the poem says, close as likeness. Rhythmico-syntactical figures had been predetermining the thought process, Shklovsky. Quote, this is Mayakovsky. I walk, swinging my arms and mumbling, still almost wordlessly. Now I slow down so as not to interrupt my mumbling. Now I mumble more rapidly to keep in time with my steps. So the rhythm is trimmed and shaped, for it is the basis of all poetry and runs through it like a roar. Gradually out of this roar, one starts to pick out separate words. Aggregate as idea of order. And speaking of syntax, there is the rhythmic structure of simile as in, quote, personal letters are like a greenhouse, the chiasm of touch. There is the likeness in a context or matrix of potential difference. All the possible differences cluster about the binary. If the hill were really like the issues, increasing as distance decreases, a drawing near becomes a translation. Picture near rhyme and off rhyme, their rhetoric framing and containing difference, catching difference in order to study its motives, if it had motives, its idea of order, apposite, unreasonable. Quote, I had left my house to relax from some tedious piece of work by walking and by a consequent change of scene. That's Paul Valéry from his essay, Poetry and Abstract Thought. A shake-up is necessary. Mayakovsky said, take a bus. The jolting is appalling. A rhythmic figure regenerates itself again, but changed because changed in the repetition, thickened or quickened. And this is Valéry again. As I went along the street where I live, I was suddenly gripped by a rhythm which took possession of me and soon gave me the impression of some force outside of myself. It was as though someone else were making use of my living machine. Then another rhythm overtook and combined with the first, and certain strange transverse relations were set up between these two principles. This is scarily like those Polynesian wave patterns used for navigation. These transverse relations. I am explaining myself as best I can. They combined the movement of my walking legs and some kind of song I was murmuring, or rather, which was being murmured through me. This composition became more and more complicated, and soon in its complexity went far beyond anything I could reasonably produce with my ordinary, usable rhythmic faculties. He goes on to talk about music, dream, error, and gift, and then it was over. The unexpected had happened and was gone. It left this other order as its evidence. how to organize, shape, compose, time in time. Repetition is binding, spellbinding, inexhaustible, fundamental. An engineering, quote, we must enter shyly, as in I have no idea. That quote is from Preparing a Length of Arc. A rhythm which cuts and defines another rhythm must leave room for the other rhythm to be heard clearly. John Miller Chernoff, African Rhythm and African Sensibility. It is as essentially other that the other must be seen. Jean Pouillon, Fétiche sans fétichisme. Wanting to come to a common language, one cleared of personality, having its meanings in the community of meanings, Robert Duncan, unpublished letter to Levertov. Those letters are going to be published soon, the Duncan-Levertov letters, by Stanford University Press. The rhythmic level is available, unfetishized otherness held in common. Quote, to beguile many and be beguiled by one. It's from Casting Sequences. Visual rhythms register repetition and difference, expectation and surprise, for instance, in the violent disjunction of, quote, firelight. The word firelight in Casting Sequences, the first part of it is not in italics, and the second is in italics. So there's an internal struggle within the word. Will it fly apart? Time will tell. The tragic clock becomes the comic clock where, quote, suppressed misfortunes from Casting Sequences plays out insistence in hilarious fake palindromes, serial reversals, rehearsals in which a finitude is revealed to be contained by the space of history, by the time of comic gesture, Brechtian in its strange-making frontality. Repetition of form allows attention to develop as coordinates pull apart. False subjects to false predicates overexposing syntax, its traces fading out in rhythmic echo called music and memory. All nature is but art, unknown to thee, that's Pope, quoted in the Jeffrey Melman book. Wallace Stevens, in his lecture, The Relations Between Poetry and Painting, quotes a revealing passage from Leo Stein's Appreciations. In Stein's chapter on reading poetry and seeing pictures, he describes how, as a child, he became aware of composition in nature and gradually realized that art and composition are one. He began to experiment as follows. I put on the table an earthenware plate, and this I looked at every day for minutes or for hours. I had in mind to see it as a picture and waited for it to become one. In time it did. The change came suddenly. Everything, including the design on the plate, became part of the larger composition, which indicated to Leo Stein that he was beginning to see rhythmically. Subsequently, Stevens places a jar in Tennessee, and round it was upon a hill. This act of composition, which, quote, made the slovenly wilderness surround that hill, is the one explored further, much further, by Welsh's Thing-Receiving Road, an aggregate of five poems, which in the journal New American Writing number 17 includes a supplement not included in the annotated here and selected poems. What's in question is the, quote, so-called natural state, Stevens' provocative, quote, cultural infiltration of this so-called natural state of perception with a first line that does not find things in nature so much as place them in nature. Her poems are, quote, ruminations on the fiction established through such a maneuver. As nature in nature, the nature of the poems, Welsh's poems, is to make an address beginning with still life in a stillness that is gathering. It is gathering its address and energy as it begins to speak, quote, of address or else slow to be secreted in Tennessee. As the lines lengthen and the rhythmic impulses quicken and complicate, overtaking one another, nodding and releasing, the story of the, quote, choice by Wallace Stevens to render the natural world cultural through artifice plays out. Ruminations are extensions and also exist in their own right, having no need of supplement. They repeat and change the work of composition described by Stevens and before him by Stein in a radical movement of macro-rhythmics. Yellow and involves a whole of composition that includes fragment, gap, rupture, and suture. Yellow and could simply point to the glasses of mango and papaya jugos on a table in a restaurant in Minneapolis. Thank you.